Monday, August 26th. In Europe, as the war enters the last week of its first year, Berlin experienced its first real air raid. British planes roared over the city for 3 hours. London, meanwhile, received 2 more German raids, bringing to 5 the Nazi air attacks on the British capital in 48 hours. Now the news from Europe direct. Berlin, London, and Rome. First, a report from the German capital by Edwin Hartridge. Go ahead, Berlin.
This is Berlin.
Last night, Berlin had its biggest and most spectacular air raid in a year of war. When I say spectacular, I mean at least as far as the display of anti-aircraft batteries, those big and little guns that lit up the dark sky over Berlin. A few hours ago, the official news agency gave us this brief statement about the air raid. We were told that several British planes entered the sky over the metropolitan area of Berlin, and according to this official statement, several incendiary bombs were dropped in 2 suburbs of Berlin, as yet unidentified. A small hut in a garden section was reported damaged by the bombs. The brief that they communicated concludes with a statement that one of the British planes was shot down on its return flight. Well, apparently that is all we will have from official quarters about the air raid for the moment. The alarm started at 12:20 last night, just as thousands of Berliners were ditching buses and streetcars to go home after a Sunday of recreation. War raid lasted 3 hours and 2 minutes. Shortly after the sirens sounded, after midnight, we heard the first rumble of heavy anti-aircraft fire, apparently coming from the outskirts of Berlin. The German air raid defense was letting go of its biggest guns, which from a distance sounded very much like bombs exploding. Incidentally, the ceiling of the clouds was rather low, which must have obstructed the firing, I would think. For some of the Germans, it must have been like trying to shoot through a giant ball of cotton. Some planes, whether British or not, I don't know, could be heard quite clearly. When they came close, the smaller gun batteries, consisting of machine guns, began to fire. And it was a fascinating sight to stand on my hotel balcony and to see the long lines of fiery tracer bullets disappearing high up into the cloud formation. The British planes spent several hours at Berlin area, and numerous times we could hear their motors. When the firing of the defense forces was at its heaviest, the whole sky was illuminated by flashes of light from explosions and by the thousands of tracer bullets, plus the long, thin beams of the searchlights trying to break through the clouds. And the air was filled with the sharp, metallic barking of the smaller guns and the muffled, booming explosions of the biggest guns. And then in the quiet, after the various salvos, they heard the tinkle of metal as hundreds of tiny bits of shell shrapnel fell back to the earth on the streets or on the roofs. And a swishing sound as it fell through the leaves of the trees. This morning, hundreds of people and children collected these tiny bits of shrapnel as souvenirs of the first big and very noisy air raid over Berlin. Well, that's about all I can give you on the air raid. Certain details of the interesting evening cannot be mentioned, as such information falls into the category of military secrets and of value to the enemy. This morning, we can find nothing in the papers about reports in London, the German planes bombed the British capital. So it is up to you on the other side of the Atlantic to fit the Berlin air raid into the general picture of events for the last few days. According to a last-minute news report, there was concentrated German bombing attacks on important military objectives in Birmingham last night. Birmingham is an important center of the English armament industry, we are told here. The large airplane factories there is some of the German objectives, it is said. The Berlin papers this morning continue to play up the reports of the German aerial successes over southwest England yesterday. We are told the 2nd and 3rd air fleets made surprise attacks, and during the day, 61 British fighter planes were shot down, while the Germans lost only 12 planes. There are 2 other items of interest from the papers this morning. We learn that General Vigon, the chief of staff of the Spanish army, is now visiting the battlefields of France. He will then come to Berlin confer a high decoration on Reichsmarshal Hermann Göring. But in Luxembourg, we learn that all political parties, except the German People's Party, have to be disbanded. This is Edwin Hartridge, returning now to Columbia in New York.
This is New York, and here's the latest news from the Balkans. In Budapest, it is announced that the Hungarian-Romanian territorial discussions are to be resumed. Hungarian Foreign Minister Count Csaky told newsmen this morning that a Romanian delegation is to meet with Hungarian representatives Wednesday. Immediately, Budapest dispatches said that there is a lessening of tension between the two countries. Now the news from the British capital, reported by Eric Severide. Go ahead, London.
This is London. London suburbs got some more screaming bombs last night, but this afternoon Londoners are far more interested in details of the RAF bombing raid on Berlin. Most of the papers this morning contained articles urging retaliation, written before it was known the RAF was on its way. In a second London raid last night, two policemen were killed and a gas main was cut. No bombing raids are yet reported today. But this morning over a southwest English town, two planes appeared very high and formed a gigantic question mark with smoke. They did some more writing after that, but even German grammar experts on the ground couldn't make it out. The Air Ministry has just announced that 54 German planes were down during Sunday, six of them by anti-aircraft. That makes the weekend total for Saturday and Sunday 104. Yesterday, 13 British fighters were lost, but three of the pilots are safe. The bombs on London caused some small fires, we're told, but the casualty total is low. From my rooftop last night, I could see an occasional flash from a bomb in the distance and the white light of a parachute flare. Without flares, the bombing pilots certainly could see nothing at all. Pitch black storm clouds were hanging very low. You could hardly make out the rooftop across the street. It was so dark. From the flashes in the sky, many people thought a vast raid was going on, but most of the flashes were lightning. It was revealed this morning that the big raid Saturday night, which fired a garment factory in the heart of London, killed no one at all, which does seem a miracle. Only one of the raids yesterday could be described as a mass raid, and we're told that attempt cost the Germans 34 planes. Kent is about the most dangerous part of England these days, but yesterday special trains left London for Kent, taking whole families of hop pickers. The season begins today, and a crop must be harvested in a hurry. In the fields between rows of hops, air raid trenches have been dug, and the pickers are getting higher pay because they are taking what are called frontline risks. Last night, German guns threw over a few more shells in the Dover area, but British bombers are believed to have retaliated immediately around Calais and Boulogne. Observers down at Dover saw a massive plume of smoke spreading upwards from the French Cape opposite. From inspection of German bombers shot down in England these last few days, it's become obvious that Germans are fitting armor plating to protect pilots and rear gunners from Hurricane and Spitfire machine gun bullets. The Germans are also experimenting with increased firepower for their own fighter machines. Ambassador Kennedy has been out to look at the bomb crater 300 yards from his summer home near London. American ambassadors in Europe are leading charmed lives. In Poland, Ambassador Biddle's place near Warsaw was missed by just a few yards and his house badly damaged. On June 3rd in Paris, a bomb landed 6 feet from Ambassador Bullitt, who was standing in the Air Ministry. It didn't explode. American reporters over here have been remarkably lucky so far, but they've all got their fingers crossed. A dozen of them have been missed by just a few feet or a few seconds, and not one has yet been seriously hurt. London today has a new daily paper. It's written by French refugee journalists. It came out this morning in 4 pages of tabloid size. Its title is simply France, with a Republican slogan below the nameplate, Liberté, Égalité, Fraternité. Today it contains articles by Duff Cooper, the Minister of Information, and Ev Currie, and, of course, General de Gaulle. There are 100,000 French and Belgian refugees in these islands who read French. And French journalists here also want to publish a weekly, which they would distribute over French cities by airplane each week. From Greece, it's reported this morning that 14 classes of reservists in the region bordering southern Albania are summoned for frontier service. British and Greek warships are cruising in Greek waters, watching for Italian ships, and mines have been laid around the Greek coast. This is London. We return you now to CBS New York.
This is New York, and now from the Italian capital comes the report of the latest news by Cecil Brown. We take you now to Rome.
This is Rome. Italian submarines are again operating in the Atlantic Ocean. The bulletin of the Italian High Command just issued reports that a large enemy oil tanker was torpedoed and seriously damaged. The general area of the attack is not given, but this is the second time that the Italians say they have attacked a ship on the ocean side of Gibraltar. successive waves of fascist bombers raided the British base of Alexandria. The war bulletin doesn't give the results of the raid, but the Italians are hammering away constantly at the Egyptian port. All the Italian planes returned from last night's raid. A British plane was forced down on the sea near the island of Lampedusa. This island is in the Straits of Sicily, halfway between Malta and the coast of Tunis. The crew consisted of the pilot and two non-commissioned officers. They were saved and taken prisoner. The British raided 3 points in Italian East Africa. At Mogadiscio, in Italian Somaliland, 4 persons were wounded. At Dalabat, a village in the Sudan, captured by the Italians, the British raid caused the death of 8 colonials and the wounding of 40. 15 native soldiers were wounded and a child killed in another raid on Kumbuchio. The high command said the damage was not considerable. A report from Bern says that British planes were over Switzerland again last night, apparently on their way to northern Italy. However, the communique today makes no mention of British bombers over this country. The British have raided northern Italy 4 times in the past 2 weeks. The Italians consistently claim that there has been no damage to military objectives. Correspondents have not been to the bombed area since these frequent raids started. So I can only report the information of the high command that there has been only very slight material damage. The fascist press admitted today that not all the German bombs hit military objectives in England. The headlines here today point out that there were fires in London following an air bombardment of military objectives. The feature of the stories, however, here is that the bombs fell near the Bank of England and the Rothschild Bank. The Popolo di Roma says the raids came as a great surprise and increased the demoralization of the British people. The headline of one paper today reads, Tempest of Steel and Fire on Besieged Britain. The fascist press and radio are heavily sarcastic toward the British for their refusal to admit the importance of British Somaliland. The papers here today are filled with stories about the great strategic value of that section of East Africa. The main argument is that from Berber and Zeila, Italian bombers can not only destroy Aden, but stop all shipping through the Suez, the Red Sea, and to India. In fact, the papers say that the road to India is now barricaded. Just 2 months ago, hostilities between France and Italy ended. We don't hear much about the operation of the Franco-Italian Armistice Commission or how the armistice terms are being worked out. So far as we can determine, the dismantling of the French naval bases at Bizerte and Toulon are proceeding. Italy, you remember, has given the right to use the port of Djibouti in French Somaliland. But whether she is doing so is part of the mystery that has been left around the operation of the armistice terms. The Italians are occupying a narrow strip of French soil at the Alpine frontier. In fact, they have practically absorbed the first bit of French territory. It's very small, however, and consists of the town of Menton, directly across the frontier from Ventimiglia. Now agitation has been renewed for the island of Corsica and part of the French Riviera coast that includes Nice. Italy has conquered British Somaliland, and there's no question Mussolini intends to make it a part of his East African empire. British Somaliland, however, is far away, a desert country, hot and dry, and Italy has a good deal of country of that kind. So it would please many Italians if the Duce took some territory more to their liking. This is Cecil Brown in Rome. I return you to CBS in New York.
This is New York, and here from our own shores comes this news from Washington. Today at noon begins the 12th day of debate on the Burke-Wadsworth conscription bill in the Senate. Senate advocates of the measure claim 51 votes for the measure, 2 more than is needed for the passage. Senate Majority Leader Barkley reports, however, that it will be Wednesday or Thursday before a final vote is taken. And with this news, we bring to a close this morning report of European development. Edwin Hartridge reported from Berlin, Eric Severide reported from London, and Cecil Brown reported from Rome. Larry Elliott speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.